A workplace Avenger is not a superhero. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic is, what is mass murder? Welcome and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Well, hello, Tymie.
Before we get started today, I just want to note that in this episode, we will be discussing violence. While our discussion today will be limited to defining mass murder and types of mass murder, we will mention a few cases as examples. We will not be sensationalizing murder in the way that some true crime podcasts tend to do. As a reminder, this is an educational podcast, and so that is our goal. Okay.
Right. True.
Yes, true. Ben, are the Idaho murders a mass murder?
Oh, that's a tough one. is this a trick question, Professor Castle?
Yes. No.
Well, I would say yes, because he killed four people all at the same time without a cooling off period.
Correct.
But it's also kind of tricky because a lot of the circumstances of that murder have things in common with like what we typically think of as serial killer MO, like breaking in at night, killing college girls, using a knife instead of a gun. But I think I'm going to go with mass murder. Locking in my final answer, mass murder.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes. Based on any of the definitions that I'm going to mention today, this case would be defined as a mass murder. So this falls under the study of multicide, which also includes serial murder. And mass murder is typically, mass and serial murder, multicide is typically defined using the number of victims and whether the murders took place at one time.
So you use the term multicide. That's a broad term for multiple sides. And sides comes from Latin sidium for the act of killing. So both mass murder and serial killing are types of multicide.
Correct.
Gotcha.
So think about homicide and mm-hmm. then multicide. So basically all we're saying mm-hmm. here is multiple homicides. So as researchers, we clearly define our concepts so that when we're studying a phenomena, we're all studying the same thing. That's what we do as researchers. If we have confusion in our definitions, it limits how we're able to study and how we're able to apply what we learn. So that being said, as researchers, we tend to stick to the definition that mass murder is four deaths in a discrete event, and that's what we call mass murder. This was the definition also used by the FBI, but after the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting, Congress lowered the number of victims required to define an event as mass murder to three. So that was just a change based on an event.
So let's say that in the Idaho murders that he didn't get caught and he kind of did the same thing again, like another college house and
yes.
he killed four people. Would he then be both a mass murderer and a serial killer?
Actually, yes, because mm-hmm. there's the cooling off period. So,
or a serial mass murderer.
Depends on the time frame, because mm-hmm. spree killer is kind of one of those in between a serial and a mass. Mm-hmm. So as I'll talk about a little bit later, a family annihilator who starts at home and kills his family and then leaves and goes mm-hmm. somewhere else mm-hmm. and shoots. If those were taking place within like 3 days or a week, that's going to be a spree killing.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so there's lots of nuance here, not all of which we're going to get into today, but yes, thank you. So confusing, right? But this mm-hmm. also leads to confusion with definitions because most people think of public or school shootings as mass murder. And while guns are primarily the weapons used, mass shootings do not always result in death. A local example is the 2022 shooting last fall.
Are you talking about the Bridgewater College shooting?
No, actually, the 2022 Bridgewater shooting was when two campus police officers were killed down the road from us by a former student who was squatting on the property. So this would be defined as a mass murder if he had shot and killed four or more people, but he did not. He just killed the two campus police officers, and it was one event. So again, like the definition, I was actually referring to mass shootings where no one dies, when people fire indiscriminately into a crowd, like the shooting last fall at off-campus housing. Eight people were injured outside of student housing. So that's what I was talking about.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
This would be an example of what people refer to as everyday gun violence. So arguments that escalate, felonies. We have one database. It's called the Gun Violence Archives, and they attempt to capture everyday gun violence by looking at all injuries and deaths by guns daily in the U.S. So they do include mass murder, but mass murder includes other types of weapons, as we noted, and makes up only a small portion of gun violence. The only database that we have that collects information about all mass murders, regardless of weapon, is the USA Today one that I will link to in the show notes. From that, we learned that 2022 saw the second most mass killings, and that's not just shootings, in a single year since tracking began. The number of victims was the third highest total, and this was only surpassed in 2017 and 2019.
So where does this information come from? Who puts it together, and where do they get this information about mass shootings?
Great question. Where does this information come from? So all of the databases that I'm talking about today use a number of different methods for getting this information. They look at things like official reports by the FBI, medical examiners' reports, court records, arrest records, prison records, and then they try to do an exhaustive media report analysis. So you're putting out Google hits on every time gun violence, stuff like that.
So when we think about mass shootings, people are most familiar with kind of the stranger in public, a shooter showing up at a school or a grocery store. In those types of shootings kind of get a lot of attention. But is that the major form of mass murder? Is that what most mass killings look like?
No. So cases in which someone shoots a stranger in a public place, these get the most attention. But fatal public shootings are just a small fraction of mass killings. There has been a spike in these types of killings over the past few years. And just in the first week of March, we passed 100 mass shootings. That's not death. That's mass shootings.
Like 100 separate
incidents. Yes. Yes. Public mass shootings are the least common type of mass murder, but the most deadly. So I also thought this is, you know, I have to say that this, we're talking today in 30 minutes or less about something that I spend 2 months on in my class. So it's really hard to bring all of the nuance that we would like. But, you know, we're sticking with our goal here of trying to discuss this in an accessible way. So I thought today we could drill down into those numbers just a bit by defining two kinds of mass killer, the family annihilator and the workplace avenger. So the most common type of mass killing is, for example, a man who kills his wife, children, and then sometimes himself. This is called the family annihilator. Mass killings take place far more often in private homes than in schools or supermarkets or churches. This is important. This is, you know, kind of a misperception I discuss with my students, because they also think that the public school shooter, for example, is the most common, or a lone actor terrorist kind of event.
I mean, that makes sense, because it's similar to just, you know, regular crime trends, where people tend to think that like stranger victimization and stranger crime is something to be really afraid of. But
yes,
you know, the most common forms of victimization are by people that we know, people that we're intimate with.
Correct, correct. So there are lots of common factors in the profile of a family annihilator that I cannot get into, but there is one that I wanted to spend a minute talking about, just because it's come up before in cases where there was no domestic or physical violence in a relationship. So this common factor in the profile of a family annihilator is called coercive control. I mention it, as I said, because there's been a few high-profile cases. The individual in these cases all used coercive control, which increases the risk of homicide when the spouse attempts to leave. So, you know, some scholars have said the domestic violence revolution that we've seen, you know, which means that we're more aware of domestic violence in the home and what to do about it. We've not seen big gains in safety or accountability, even though we're all more aware of it. And that's because people are only looking at physical violence. So coercive control is used to extend control over time. So it can include physical assault, but it also includes threats, humiliation, intimidation, and other abuse that's used to harm, punish, or frighten a victim. So examples of this, restricting autonomy, which just means controlling where you go. Isolating a person from their friends and family. Calling them names. Controlling the money. Manipulating the kids. Being extremely jealous. See, none of this stuff is physical violence, right? It's all a form of control. And it's common in our profiles of family annihilators.
That's what I was going to ask. So you're saying those things are kind of like precursors to violence or family annihilation?
Yeah. So I was thinking about, and I can't remember the case recently, but it was a family of five, I believe, and the husband killed the wife and the children. But all of the news reports I saw after this case were that, oh, he was never physically violent with her. But when you look at history, these elements of coercive control were all there. And we know if that's the case, it increases the risk of homicide.
Gotcha.
So that's the family annihilator, and that is the most common type of mass killer. So that's also a really important point I want to drill down, is that is the most likely.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the workplace avenger seeks revenge for a perceived grievance and enacts that revenge out at their current or former employment.
So we've got the family annihilator and the workplace avenger. That, I mean, not making light because it's a serious topic, but like whoever came up with those names, they're pretty creative. It sounds like a supervillain, like the family annihilator versus the workplace avenger.
Yes, I actually did make the that joke about the avenger in my class, and only one person laughed.
Lame students. But the workplace avenger, so that's kind of like going postal.
Yes.
Does anybody even use that term anymore?
No. I brought it up to students and they had no idea what I was talking
about. Nobody knows what going postal is anymore?
No.
Well, so going postal, it was a series of post office shootings that happened in the late 80s and early 90s by disgruntled post office workers. So there was a lot of attention to kind of like bad working conditions and post office being understaffed and underfunded and bosses is kind of being tyrannical to their mail carriers and mail deliverers. And so you had a number of post office workers basically, you know, snapping and killing their bosses and coworkers. For example, in 1986, Patrick Sherrill killed 14 coworkers and himself at an Oklahoma post office.
Yes.
So going postal, workplace avengers, it's kind of an older phenomenon than what we kind of think of as the mass shooters, public shooters now. It happened kind of before.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So now I'm not going to be able to not laugh every time you say workplace avenger. But yeah, the going postal, I mentioned this to students, but they pretty much say that pulling a Columbine has replaced going postal to sort of, you know, kind of for the same reason, different kind of scenario. But we talk about the Columbine shootings in 1999 as being the start of mass shootings as public spectacle, where you have all of this news attention. Because even though I remember hearing going postal growing up, I didn't know what it referred to. I was like, I had no idea. I just repeated it. I heard people say it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Kind of Columbine is like the turning point or the tipping point or the starting point, I guess.
Right. And our students, the students in my class right now were, of course, born after Columbine. We just talked about that the other day. And
I mean, so this is kind of a side tangent.
Yeah.
But being out of school, out of high school before kind of the mass shooting phenomenon, I did not realize until recently, like how much that's affected school kids, like how much that's a real concern. I mean, you know, being a criminologist, we recognize that they're statistically rare and, you know, they happen frequently and get media attention, but statistically it's very rare phenomena, but still it's something that kind of like pervades student thinking. Like in my ethics class, for example, I have them write, we do like ethical scenarios for criminal justice officials, and they have to like solve them. And then the last exercise is they have to write their own ethical dilemma. And one of the ones this semester, which was really interesting, but also kind of very eye-opening, a group wrote that, you know, imagine that you're in a school shooting and you're locked down in the classroom and one of your friends is out in the hall and wants to come in the classroom. Should you open the door for your friend? Like that was their ethical dilemma. And like that's something that I would never have thought about. But then, of course, everyone was like, no, don't open the door. Like even though it's your friend, that's one person. And if you open the door, everybody in the classroom could be killed. And that's something that like school age kids are thinking about that I would never have imagined.
Yeah, we're older than that because we missed all the active shooter drills. We missed all of that. You know, they were on our minds a little when I was in high school because one of the first high profile school shootings happened in Kentucky, which is where I grew up. But yeah, we didn't have any of the security measures that we have nowadays, which we can talk about in another episode and likely will. I do want to mention that I said something earlier. I referenced he as, you know, when I was saying mass shooter and I referenced he, and I do want to point out that in the most comprehensive database that we have on mass public shooters, there are a couple of females, but it is rare, extremely rare. Unfortunately, one of the examples is a professor who was a what we call a workplace avenger. In 2010, University of Alabama professor, she had been denied tenure. She was going to lose her job. And walked into a faculty meeting and killed three people and injured three others. So I used that example in class today when discussing workplace avenger because it is unusual for it to be for there to be females as perpetrators, but it does happen. So let me just highlight a couple of things and to sort of wrap this up, and then I'll just mention that I spend 2 months on mass murder, so I could talk about this extensively, and there are lots of pieces to kind of pull out and spend more time on, and we may do that.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's just a huge topic. So a couple of things I want to highlight is, first, the number of shooters who are motivated by racism, religious hate, and misogyny. The number of shooters motivated by those factors has increased most dramatically in the last 5 years. So that's something that we point out as being a piece of data that's concerning. There are strong links between suicidal motivations and mass shootings. So from the Violence Project, which is a huge database of all public mass shootings in the United States since we have information about mass shootings, 84% of the perpetrators in this database showed some signs of crisis. Mm. And so if we change the sort of the way that we're thinking about, with them showing signs of crisis and there being such strong links between suicidal motivations and mass shootings, it gives us some place to target, you know, something for intervention or prevention to think about.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that seems like an important topic, but something that we could maybe talk about more on another episode.
Yes.
How do you identify and intervene ahead of time?
Yes, that's not something we're going to be able to get to today.
For sure.
Also, the percent of perpetrators driven by a desire for fame has risen significantly in the last 5 years. So that's it's another piece of data because we now know that leakage is a term where it's basically we're just referring to the fact that the perpetrator will disclose that they're planning to do something. It could be by talking to someone or it could be on social media, which is more likely these days. So that increases and amplifies the event too, unfortunately. So the desire for fame, a motivating factor has increased. So the last kind of point I wanted to raise is about guns, because handguns are actually the most common weapon used in mass shootings. And I think people have the perception that it's an assault rifle. Mm. They're most common at 3 times the rate of shotguns, rifles, or assault rifles. But there is a statistically significant increase of assault rifle use in the last 5 years. All that means is that it's increased, right? So the use of assault rifles in mass shootings has increased, but handguns are still, or semi-automatic weapons are still most likely. Mm-hmm. And this does coincide with shootings becoming more deadly. So there's a lot to think about here.
Yeah.
Profiles, the reason we do this, profiles of mass shooters, kind of help us find patterns, as I said, and talk about points of intervention and prevention. And those are all things that we can get into on another episode of our podcast.
All right. Well, to close the show, it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from the show. So, Tymie, in just a minute, what's your spin?
My spin today is that a workplace avenger is not a superhero. Ben? Yeah.
True, for sure.
What's your spin?
Okay. So my spin is also about the workplace avenger, but I'm going to use my own lyrics to a Kenny Chesney song to show that mass shootings are not just public strangers, but workplace avenger is also another type of. So, deliver letters overworked. His mailman boss is such a jerk. You better watch that man. He'll go postal on you.
I didn't even realize that Kenny Chesney wrote a song about going postal.
No, it's actually coastal. So the Kenny Chesney song is like, you know, he works in a garage and he's taken off and he's living his life and he's going to live on the coast and listen to Catch Fish and listen to cover bands. And you better watch that man. He'll go coastal on you. So when it comes, I always think he'll go postal on you instead.
Okay, thanks. This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU. See the show notes for links to articles and studies that we discussed in the podcast. Please help us decide on what justice topics to cover by sending suggestions to gandhicenter@jmu.edu or DM us on Instagram @gandhicenterjmu.